Next on the agenda, I'm going to introduce Abby Fink. We'll make some welcoming remarks, and then we'll do introductions soon after, okay?
Good morning, everybody. As AJ said, I'm Abby Fink with HMA Public Relations. I'm one of the communications consultants to NHA. And I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
We really wanted to have a forum just so that, and this really is an outcome of some of the articles from the Arizona Republic. We want to thank Dennis and Craig Harris for bringing to the forefront the issue of Indian housing, and more especially on the Navajo Housing Authority. And what we wanted to do was to kind of fill in the blanks and to tell the complete story with respect to the status of the Navajo Housing Authority. And so the purpose really today is to give you a quick overview. And some of you have been privy to some of the PowerPoint that we're going to provide. So I'm going to ask for your indulgence to go over that one more time. The other matter is with respect to NAHASDA, the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act, that was enacted in 1996. And NHA since then has been receiving funds based on a formula. So I can't account for the first 10 years of NAHASDA, but I can account for the last 10 years, or the most recent 10 years of NAHASDA. Though we have reported and collected information of official reports that are submitted to HUD. And so the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is the federal oversight agency for all tribes and tribally designated housing entities. And so NHA is the TDHE for the Navajo Nation. And with respect to those reports today, as of last year, the most current HUD monitoring review of 2016 really evidences that NHA is in relatively good standing. The only program violation that they had with NHA is the operation and maintenance of the 1937 Act units. And so that really is our primary focus with respect to compliance. And as well, we have an independent auditor that comes out every year. And the latest review indicated that we have an unqualified status from the independent auditors. And that really is indicative of the good management standing that we currently have at NHA. And so I really want to make sure that those facts were known with respect to NHA. As well, we have the HUD Office of Inspector General that comes out periodically, and the latest was for a review done in the first quarter of fiscal year 2015, in which they actually wanted to see how NHA, we drew down like $40 million in that one quarter, October, November, and December of 2014, which is the first quarter of 2015. So they reviewed it. They found everything very in good order. So that shows that we have internal controls and mechanisms within NHA. So with that, I want to start with this PowerPoint. I also will have Mr. Mello Willie assist me in part of the presentation. Okay. Basically, the overview of my presentation really is going to be talking about the typical building period for a typical project on our reservation. And we have a really lovely map right behind the folks here that shows the entire reservation. So, and then I'm going to talk about some of the challenges and reforms. As I said, I came into the period of most recent 10 years, back in 2007. We also are going to provide to you a five-year expenditure plan that had to deal with some accumulation of unspent funds that really became a national issue for our program and for other tribes as well. And then we want to talk about impacts of some of the investments of dollars that NHA has made throughout the communities of Navajo housing, of Navajo Nation. And then we want to talk about the future, some of the development strategies immediately underway at this point. So, Joe, we have another chair up here.
Yeah.
So this is like a typical project timeline for a 20 scattered site home ownership unit project. And when I say scattered site, that means 20 homes that are placed on individual home site leases on our reservation in a given community. So typically, this is like a five-year process. And what I'm going to describe to you is NHA, as a TDHE, or tribes receiving the HASDA funds, are really subject to heavy regulations, not only from HUD, but from the administration with respect to cost principles and with respect to Department of Interior, where we have to work with BIA. And we had to work with BIA on trust land issues and lease land withdrawals and so forth. And then we worked with the Department of Health and Human Services, Indian Health Services, department in which we have to look at right-of-ways on some of the water lines and wastewater lines that they have installed. And so we work with them in collaboration for our development sites. In addition, we have Department of Treasury for the funds accountability, the funds drawdown, and the reporting. And we actually have one tax credit that was built before I came on with NHA. And so we work with Treasury's low-income housing tax credit program that's being administered out of the Arizona Department of Housing. So with respect to the scattered site, coming back to this, is that planning stage, this is like a pre-planning, where we have perhaps land proposed for a house to be built. And that normally ranges from 9 months to a year, where we do site feasibility. We need to assess the utility locations and connections. We look at the home site lease approvals, making sure that's all complete. And any right-of-ways for utility connections, we need to look at all the entities involved to get those right-of-ways that would include our primary utility supplier, Navajo Tribal Utility Authority. And then we do the environmental reviews too as well with HUD. And so that's a very tedious process, but it's a very necessary process to getting the release of funds from HUD before we can even dig dirt. So that's about a 9 month to a year process. And then the design stage, once that's all done, we then take it to our procurement department to gel all of the project, where we do the bidding and all the due diligence with respect to procurement. We put together the engineering specs for the soil testing. We get the project wage decision from the U.S. Department of Labor, another federal agency we work with, and we report to them as well. And then we do the site design, all the off-site utility infrastructure, if that's what's needed. Then, of course, the individual housing plans and specifications. And that normally is a 6 to 9 month time frame. And then we get into the actual construction stage. We get into the bid award and we execute construction. We hire only general contractors at this point. There was an issue with the quality of homes being built prior to me coming on. So we changed the whole atmosphere to a contract-based environment, making sure that we have the proper performance and payment bonding and licensing and so forth with these contractors. And then we also procure third-party inspection firms, again, firms that really know full compliance, and so that's a third-party inspection for all our projects. Then we have a 12-month warranty period for every project once it's completed after final completion. We have a 12-month warranty, and only then can we close out that project and report to HUD. So that's about a 2 to 3 year time frame. So you'll see, typically they run from 3 to 5 years, depending on the size of the project. So immediately, like I said, I can't account for the first 10 years up to 2006. Yet, when I came in 07, these were some of the real issues. I have a passion for housing. I've been in the affordable housing arena for about 28 years, but I've been working 34 years. But it's always been in the construction arena. My background, I am an industrial engineer. I graduated from NMSU years ago. But I got into the field of affordable housing years back. I worked with the Arizona Department of Housing as well as private consulting. I worked with housing entities for about 10 years. But when I came in, there was this scathing report from the HUD Office of Inspector General for audit. And so what 2 months into my occupation as the new CEO, this was really the subject of what the Arizona Republic articles have highlighted in their report with respect to those projects at Tulani Lake, at South Shiprock Housing Entity. So what I've analyzed when I came in is that these funds were primarily given to subrecipients. The majority were given to subrecipients. I think over $70 million have been given to subrecipients through the first 10 years. And so when I came in, I found out that there were some, mismanagement, misappropriations of some dollars, some environmental reviews that were not completed. There were a whole host of program violations that were cited in this report that was issued in April of 2007. So obviously, one of the recommendations was either you do away with the subrecipient program NHA, or you look at a three-year moratorium. And so we worked with the local Southwest HUD office out of Phoenix, and we agreed with the recommendation to put a pause on construction. Primarily that was happening with subrecipients, and so we did that. We incorporated checks and balances. We checklisted everything out. So 3 years assisted me, too, to evaluate and assess what non-compliance issues there were, what we needed to do with all the programs. And so NHA oversees over 9,000 housing units presently, and including probably another 2,000 from Silver City. And so we were still responsible for the oversight of that, making sure that they're compliance with not only the house but other federal laws. So we instituted or revamped our subrecipient program policy. That was one. And then 3 months later, in July of 2007, I came on February 2007. Let's keep that in perspective. We received the first letter of warning from HUD, where they then stepped up and issued, and actually started enforcement proceedings for the very first time against NHA because of what I guess occurred through the previous administration, where the former CEO was suspended, debarred. We also took issue and filed court proceedings with the general contractor, Lodge Builders. So he's serving time at this point in time in prison. But regardless, there were some outstanding non-compliance issues that was a whole range of non-compliance matters that stem back to 2002. So that took the organization 5 years, really, literally, and this is working every day, really going back and doing forensic reviews of all the Indian housing plans since NAHASDA was enacted. That's what that required. Training, policy revamping, and training to staff and so forth. And while I was addressing some staff turnover too. So that took all 5 years for us to complete. While doing the day-to-day operations, while also addressing a major bankruptcy, while also looking at stimulus funding that need to be spent. So a lot of concurrent major activities were happening at this point in time. We HUD rescinded that letter of warning in January 2011 officially. And do you know, the following fiscal years, 2012 and 2013, there were zero findings, first ever for NHA from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. That meant we were in compliance with what we, with the program, and all aspects of compliance. We, to this day, though, the only finding that remains, and finding is a violation of the program, is maintenance repairs of these older units, 37 old units. You know, and then that same month I received a report from HUD. There was a 20-member team that came up from FHEO San Francisco to do what's called a Section 504 review. And that really was looking at our accessibility compliance with regard to the Section 504, the Rehab Act of 1973. So that, with our public rental units, they reviewed all of that throughout our reservation. So that revealed some deficiencies too. NHA was not meeting the minimum requirement of 5% of our rental units to be made accessible for the hearing, for the mobile impaired, plus an additional 2% for the hearing and visual impaired. So that was another compliance agreement that we needed to execute with FHEO. So all this was the challenges. So we instituted some reforms. So the management challenges, and I came in to everything was still manualized. People were keeping general ledgers. We also had financial management systems that didn't speak to there was no tenant accounting system as well. And so we had to do procurement. I think we've gone through procurement twice for all of this before even Terry came on. We could not find a contractor that would help, that was canned packaged for a lot of public housing authorities. Because of our profile and logistics and demographics, it was a challenge for consultants to help us do that. But we did find a consultant. We do have a robust financial management system and a tenant accounting software. And then also converting to the HUD accounting system to GAAP. And so we were in conversion of some of those basic system procedures that we needed to institute. Management policies, there were 43 management policies just outdated. And so that was a huge task to look at that, but to also then develop standard operating procedures. We had 15 field offices throughout the reservation to help accommodate customer services, and so that's been a process.
And just to point out, NHA is the largest Indian housing authority, but based in size and demographics and the number of the budgets, we're almost the eighth largest public housing authority in the United States, right behind the city of Atlanta. So this, while it may seem a menial task to get a financial management system and a tenant management system, for the breadth and large size of the housing authority, Navajo Housing Authority, to do that undertaking going from a written ledger to actual computerized system really was a huge task, which for other smaller housing authorities may be able to, especially Indian housing authorities, may be able to do this quite quickly. But for Navajo, it's always this task that, because they're so large, because they're so different, and because what they even have 15 field offices, which have varying abilities of infrastructure for technology and internet capabilities, that this task was very a huge undertaking. So that's why we point out these issues. They're not, you may see them with other Indian housing authorities, which may be small. Even the next housing authority, which is Cherokee Housing Authority, is probably equal to only one of our field offices, 15 field offices. So that gives you some context of what you're dealing with and what you're seeing today.
You bet. And then especially with 9,000 housing units, all the particulars we have on Priscilla Synergy, and who can expand on that too. I mean, this is billions and billions of data that we have that we needed to really organize and then do beta test runs before we could actually implement. So the other two, real quickly, is the lock straw, the line of credit control systems, what lock stands for. I call it dining for dollars. So when you have an invoice, and this is how, and this money, these monies are not given to us, a check to our bank account. These monies are kept in the U.S. Department of Treasury system, and that's called the lock system. And so as we incur expenses or as I get an invoice to pay for a product or a service, we then collect all this from all the field offices because they all have different ranges and core functions, to where then our finance and accounting then have been doing monthly draws. But that would be a whole compilation of invoices and so forth. And so what we've been doing and what's been happening is they would then do these monthly draws. We increase that, streamline the process, and develop standard operating procedures of where we are now performing daily to weekly draws, weekly at the very minimum. And in some cases, we do it daily for real-time outcomes. So that really expedited our expenditure and drawdowns. We've also refined all of our process with respect to supporting documentation. Procurement inefficiencies, and I have my procurement manager, Terrellyn Cook, who will also give a quick overview of procurement. Procurement is very critical when you talk about the mechanisms to make sure that these funds are procured competitively and that there's due diligence with respect to capacities by prospective vendors and contractors, and making sure they have the proper licensing, the bonding, and so forth. So that's very critical. And then once that's done is then you follow through with the funds expenditures. And so that's a really key component, key function with regard to bringing the unspent funds down. And so we'll have a separate presentation with Terrellyn Cook in a little bit. Next. Along the way, the development challenges, when I came on, my background is in engineering. I have been in the construction field for years prior to coming to NHA. And I worked with U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in previous years. I have Dwayne Waseda and the team from operations who have been working with regard to flood mapping and some of the planning systems. So this was one where we went up and actually visited Army Corps with some of the technologies on aerial photometric mapping. I was very intrigued with that. And so we said, we are going to do that for all of NHA. And we updated all our contour mapping for the entire reservation. So we flew a plane throughout the reservation. I think they were 2 foot or 10 foot contour intervals. 10 foot intervals. So we did that throughout. We digitized the entire mapping system. So we have a land information management system that has that, and there's a lot of applications that we can derive from that. What we're doing now is utilizing for a lot of our flood delineations throughout the reservation. From that too, we're creating mitigation plans for those areas that are impacted by potential flood. And then we kept 3D mapping imaging capabilities when you can take the digital data, simulate it and put it for a community and simulate a 3D imaging. And that really is helpful for our community members because we kept have that imagery shown to them. And we have that in Navajo. We can relay that in the Navajo language. We've also undertaken a housing needs assessment, not ever been done for the Navajo Nation. So I needed a baseline measure. That took a 2 to 3 year effort. August of 2011, we published a housing needs study, really scientifically based with respect to statistical methods and techniques. We have a $9 billion housing need as a result of that overview. And we welcome you to come to our website to look at that, too. You'll look at the detailed housing needs study. What's interesting with that is what you see, what I think Dennis and Craig have shown in the articles, is that the housing conditions are still very desperate. The funding mechanism is, while 80 to 90 million may seem like a whole lot, half of that's already taken off the top to operate and maintain and administer the day-to-day operations of the 9,000 housing units that we currently have to do. And then the remaining amount then is competitive for all, not only new construction, but under self-determination, under this law, the leadership of Navajo Nation makes those decisions to also address assistance to our youth through youth centers, assistance to our elderly through elderly group homes, and other uses that are called model activities. HUD does review those model activities and give us approval for that. So there's other competing needs for these funds, and so we'll show some of the investments that we've made accordingly. And then we have this concept of integrated development planning really coming to NHA. It's just really not looking at housing and building housing, but you really should consider other forms of development for a community. And so we get into master planning. And so we've also procured a master planning services for all of the individual chapters. And so that was also done with respect to what we needed to do so that we really can optimize all the resources for a community. Next. While we were still addressing everything, the major non-compliance issues, there was a major bankruptcy proceeding, and that was one major subrecipient for Defiance Housing Corporation, where, again, this one general contractor is now serving time in prison. That we were able to recover a little over $2 million, but that was a 5 to 6 year bankruptcy proceeding, so we had to participate in all of that. That one subrecipient developed, I don't know the exact number of homes, but offhand, but it was 20 different sites, and 20 different sites with different financing mechanisms, and so that's what really caused a lot more due diligence with respect to unwinding some of the things that we could secure back in terms of recovery. ERA, the stimulus dollars, I think you all remember that. That took place back in 2008-2009. NHA was allocated $34 million, and so one of the primary requirements was to expedite the expenditure of those funds and really create some immediate improvements. So we were able to do that. We closed that project out successfully. We also engaged in helping to originate a federal law called the Indian Veterans Housing Opportunity Act of 2010 because of our Navajo veterans saying that they're not qualifying because of the service-connected disability compensation they received. So we worked with other tribes in Congress, and so we were able to pass this while we were also doing other addressing other challenges. Next. So at this point, I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to introduce Miller Willey, who's our one of our advisors, to go cover some other external reports too that are very critical.
So in your packet, there's a better description of this slide. But the slide really goes into detail about the Government Accountability Office. Back in 2014, the Government Accountability Office, an independent agency, federal agency, that looks at different issues. Congress had asked them to look at the issues of Indian housing. What are some of the challenges that exist in providing housing development on Indian trust lands and Indian areas? One of the things that they noted is these different challenges that are cited in the report, cited of remoteness. Many of the tribes, especially the tribes in the Southwest and in Alaska, you have to realize a lot of the tribes in Alaska are dealing with very remote areas that they're trying to do development. Land availability, especially within tribal trust lands, it notes in this report, specifically notes the Navajo Nation of having 90% of the land in trust land. Further, when you look at the historical development, and not only Indian land law and Indian development, but Navajo land law, and the way that Navajo has developed its own internal system was predicated by the fact that the relationship with the federal government and the way that they created the grazing rights and the individual land rights. This goes back to the issues of land availability and some of the things that happened back into the early 1920s, 1930s still are stumbling today. Navajo Nation is working proactively on these issues right now, and they've even made recent changes as of within the first quarter of this year to do some major land reform efforts. Lack of infrastructure that goes along with remoteness and land availability. Federal coordination. A lot of these federal dollars for housing development come from different federal agencies. When we specifically talk about one issue of environmental reviews, if you have one federal program that's providing, or one federal housing program, housing development project that has federal dollars from several different agencies, you're having to go through several environmental reviews. That coordination policy has never been able to be fully coordinated by the federal government. They're still working out on how to coordinate environmental reviews. Technical assistance. This is one area that really is a trouble problem for Navajo Housing Authority, because most of the technical assistance advisors that provide training and technical assistance to Indian housing authorities are focused on those lower, smaller housing authorities. So when you get to technical problems that are dealing with Navajo, there's no set framework. So all of your best practices and things are based upon other Indian tribes. There was a people often refer back to Cherokee and how Cherokee's programs have all of these different great homeownership products that have all of these great things that they're doing with rental assistance. Cherokee doesn't have a reservation. Cherokee doesn't have as large as trust land. So there's, when you try to look at the diversity within Indian country, it's hard to make comparisons between different Indian housing authorities. I've worked as the executive director of the National American Indian Housing Council, seeing all of the housing programs throughout the United States, provided technical assistance to all of the housing programs. We were the premier technical assistance agency to all of the Indian country. So I know that these issues, we always talk about the diversity within Indian housing programs. And definitely, Navajo Housing Authority is an anomaly within the Indian housing sector. So it points specifically within this Government Accountability Office report, those challenges that were largely related to remoteness and other geographic factors, land use regulations, lack of adequate infrastructure, different federal agency requirements, potential reduction in training opportunities, program support, limited administrative capacity, conflict within tribes, cultural factors. Some IHBG recipients, such as the Navajo Housing Authority, faced a combination of all of these challenges. And if you go back to that report, consistently, Navajo is pointed out as one of the case studies in all of these challenging areas. This report was specifically procured and asked for by the appropriators because we were dealing with some unspent funds issues. At the time, it wasn't just Navajo's unspent funds issues. It was all of the tribes' unspent funds issues. Another report that was recently released on January 19th of this year goes back to the Indian Housing Needs Assessment. If you look at these numbers that are provided onto your PowerPoint, it shows the constant dollars and $98. Back in when NAHASA was first allocated money, that money amount was had buying power of $636 million. Today, that buying power is down to $429 million. And you'll see a national trend of where tribes, their allocation and their buying power is becoming so constrained that they're moving. And also, as you develop, and this is not just a trend within Indian housing, it's a trend in all public housing. You go back to Albuquerque, you go back to Atlanta, you go back to all of these other public housing authorities, they will tell you one of the biggest problems is rehabilitation of their older housing units. They're not getting enough federal funds to provide for new housing units because they're spending a lot of their money repairing the older housing units. So these numbers specifically from the study show that new housing units and from 1998 to 2006 showed that they were doing $1,900 units per year. When you compare that contrast in 2011 to 2014, is 2,000 units per year. However, rehabilitated units, in the beginning, they were only doing 2,700 units a year, where it's moved up largely to 48,000 units per year. So you can see that the tribes are spending a lot more money focusing on rehabilitation as opposed to new housing units. We look at the constant dollars of housing development specifically, and this shows how much money is spent on housing development. Of that $636 million, $244 million is used specifically for housing development. So we're often criticized, how come you guys don't have more new housing units, even though you receive on average $80 to $90 million? We don't use $80 to $90 million. Specifically for housing, new housing development. We have all these 9,200 housing units that we still must maintain. We have everyday housing services that are provided. So this shows you how much is used in housing development dollars in 2011 to 2014. It goes down to $128. A little quote that's taken from the housing needs assessment, presumably judging that an emphasis on rehabilitation given the overall funding constraint would allow tribes to reach a larger share of families in need. This is an assessment that's come out just on the 19th of this month that shows a snapshot of all of Indian country. Go to the next slide. So all of the reforms, addressing all of the challenges and the reforms, people asked when in 2013, how are you going to address this $470 million in unspent housing funds? NHA was tasked to put together a five-year expenditure plan working closely with the Housing and Urban Development HUD. This is their expenditure plan, and this is the projections. They initially started with other projections, but these are real-time numbers. So in 2013, they had $470 million. Their expenditures for that year were $142 million. Subtotal to 328, they still received their allocation of $82 million. So when you begin 2014, $410 million, they spent $146 million that year. They have a subtotal of 263. $83 million was allocated to them. So they start off the fiscal year in 2015 at $347 million. 2015, they spent $129 million. They received their IHBG allocation of $83 million. 2016 started off with $301 million. They spent a whopping $152 million in 2016. You have your IHBG allocation of $86 million. So at the beginning of fiscal year 2017, October 1, 2016, they started off at $236 million. This year's planned expenditure for the expenditure plan is $150 million. By the time they spend that down, they will have gotten kill to kill with their $86 million of their annual allocation. We don't know the allocation projection numbers for this year because HUD basically provided an unrealistic number based on the president's budget request, which is $700 million. It likely will not be allocated by Congress as $700 million. The other point to point out is these allocations down here, we don't receive those until 9 months into the fiscal year. So July of the fiscal year, you're expecting Navajo Housing Authorities to spend $86 million in 2 months. It's not possible. Navajo Housing Authority will always have an unspent fund balance of at least a year before, or maybe 2 years. So when you're talking about Navajo having all this money in a big coffer, it's not realistic. You will always have unspent funds because of Congress. Congress is not appropriating the funds on time. And that's a real-time issue, not just with Indian housing, but with all federal agencies across the board.
Next.
The next slide. These are the impacts from the expenditure plan. These are the real numbers that come out. You'll see for the 5 years, modernization, 878 units that were reproduced. You can talk to the folks today to talk about what modernization entails, but a lot of times it's modernizing those the infrastructure for the house, such as the AC system, the electrical system, the plumbing system. By the time you put that all into one category of modernizing it, it's the same cost of rebuilding the whole house. And so they even go down to just the foundation and rebuild the back of the house. So these are practically new units, but we don't consider them new units because they're units that already existed but needed to be modernized. New construction of public rental, 251 units. New construction of homeownership units is 287. The Section 504 accessibility, AJ talked about that, 29 units during those 5 years. Crime prevention and safety, this is a large part where we enhance the communities to make sure that they're meeting some of the crime prevention needs within those communities. Transitional and group homes, infrastructure development, model projects, those numbers are articulated there. Crime prevention and safety, those are the number of households served, not the number of units. So you'll see in the number of these categories, model projects are those projects like our Boys and Girls Clubs. You'll see those today, our daycare center, which you'll see today in Navajo. These are the units and these are the projections. It was funny because I was responding to some folks the other day, just even pulling out these numbers, you get to almost half of that $600 million that's been spent in the 5 years. If you were to put at average costs of how much each unit would have cost. So it's unrealistic when people say that there's no housing development happening on Navajo, because even if you were to basically take out your calculators right now, you would show that half of the money from that $600 million went to those housing development construction. So these are the actual numbers. These are the numbers that are reported to HUD through the annual performance report. HUD only reports, we only report to HUD the outputs. So these are the numbers that articulate. We don't share to some extent the other information on number of families served through other programs, but we keep those numbers. But if we provide them to you, one of the problems that we have, if Dennis was to get the numbers on the numbers of family serves for our Boys and Girls Clubs, those numbers are not collected by HUD. So HUD would not know and ask for those numbers. And so when you go, the problem that we have a lot of time when we go up to the Hill and also with reporters, we provide the numbers to you. You go to HUD to verify them. HUD doesn't have a way of verifying them because those numbers are not reported to HUD as part of the annual performance report. So the numbers we are providing to you reflect what's provided in the annual performance report. This is a snapshot of current projects in currently on the Navajo Nation. This is available on our website and has a way in which you can snap onto any one of these projects. A plethora of projects. I think there's just a sample right now, right? On our website. But you can put on the projects. It shows you the project number, shows you the number of units and where it's taking place. Literally hundreds of projects. What we want to emphasize of this is that we only report to HUD the output. So when a unit, when this project, say here, if this unit was a new housing project, we only show that numbers to HUD as far as the actual units that were built from that project. We don't report on an annual basis whether that project is in process, what part of the stage of the process. As you remember back, it takes 3 to 5 years to finish one house. So these are in various stages from planning to completion of construction. So in the beginning, AJ talked about the subrecipient program. From 1998 to 2005, the subrecipient program was a strategy of how NHA was providing housing development. They had 61 different housing providers that were local housing providers. NHA was like a grant-making program where they granted those funds out to local housing providers. They did the housing project. That project still in some existence today, but we've reduced those numbers down to 20 subrecipients from 61 to 20. Those 20 do have the internal capacity to provide the housing project. SWIFT is one of the subrecipients of NHA's IHBG funds. But that whole approach had to change from doing the housing development strategy to from a subrecipient program to this strategy. The six approaches to NHA's current housing development strategy focuses on these areas. What has been completed? This is included into your packet. Here outlines the housing development strategy. NHA first took looking at the baseline data and demographics. This is the housing needs assessment, the most sophisticated needs assessment that you can see on Indian land in the Indian country, where they articulated 34,000 houses are needed on Navajo. Existing 34,000 are in need of major repair. Equates to $9 billion in unmet housing need on Navajo Nation. The next part of the planning of housing development process, the planning and management infrastructure. We talked about all of those major reforms that had to be taken place within the organization before housing development could really start. A lot of it also putting an investment into the planning infrastructure, the land information management system,
the data needs assessment, the sustainable master plan, some of those things. Also the regional planning, this is where we've worked and engaged with the Navajo Nation Council, the 110 chapters. Not every 110 chapter can receive a Boys and Girls Club, or a senior center, or a community facility. There's just not enough money. So they need to take a more regional planning approach of how they can share services for each one of those chapters, because there's not enough money to go out to each one of the 110. Then the next approach is looking at the sustainable master plan communities. Those communities that were ready were provided assistance to create a sustainable master plan. And you'll see that those projects were completed, as well as a comprehensive plan for Navajo Nation, taking all of this infrastructure, the land information management system, our housing needs assessment, and putting it into a master planned approach. This is available on our website as well, our sustainable master plan that's been provided. The things that we're working on now is working on leveraged financing. We've submitted to HUD regulations to look at tax-exempt bond financing, because the $80 to $90 million that you receive per year is a lot of money, but it's not enough. It only puts a Band-Aid on the housing need within the Navajo Nation. So looking at a way to leverage our Indian Housing Block Grant dollars so that it's meeting the greater needs. We also need to meet the needs of middle to higher income families, because we're having a large brain drain effect on Navajo, where our middle to higher income families don't have a place to live. There's no private housing stock, little to no private housing stock on the Navajo Nation. So what are we going to do to meet those needs? The last area is looking at economic development and job creation. How can we create those job creation opportunities? You can provide housing, but what good is it to provide housing if you don't have any jobs available? So that's the areas that we're looking into in the six approaches to housing community development. The last thing that I want to point out to you is a short little one-pager front and back. It kind of goes into specifics about the recent housing needs assessment. Also shows you the projected amount of impact in this little infographic here and what's been done within the 5 years of the housing needs assessment. This same information that we presented to you today is the same thing that we present and provide information to our policymakers, to HUD, and also to other Indian tribes. As the largest grant recipient of Indian Housing Block Grant dollars, as a steward of those funds, we think it's important we've been transparent with other Indian tribes on the progress that we've been making. They were doubtful that we could make our progress of that $470 million and bringing it down significantly and doing it in a targeted way. And now that we're going back, they're pleased that they've seen the outcome of what we've been able to provide. So I hope that we can have a really robust dialogue about the actual facts and the information that's available out there. And also based upon the trends that are happening in Indian housing, I think there really needs to be a steady approach to what we're dealing with Navajo, and not to come in with these preconceived notions of just looking at dollars spent on new units that are developed. Thank you.
Thank you, Miller. And to that, you know, and I mentioned earlier with the expenditure situation, that is really huge. And so we've been reporting this to Congress every year with all our delegation, Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah, as well as select committees of Congress. So with respect to that, I really want to talk about the procurement aspect. We have Terry Cook, who we just received accolades and awards that this woman has assisted us with at NHA, and so I really appreciate her talent. So at this point, we can go to her presentation, because it does speak to how we've incorporated those internal controls and what she's done to assist with the standard operating procedures and the like. So Terry.
Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. I'll reintroduce myself, I guess, formally in Navajo. So I'll first introduce myself in regards to what my clients are, so just proper. She'e Terilyn Cook Nishia, Kopaha Nishia, Nolakni Bashishi, Isa Kodi Bashishi, my Nishiki Nishia. And so that's who I am, and that makes me, I guess, representative of my family and community. But as AJ and Mellor talked about the different reforms that NHA had gone through. One of those reforms in particular was procurement. And so I just wanted to give everybody a snapshot as to what we're working with now and what we've done to improve the efficiencies over at NHA. So if we go to the first slide, when we're dealing with procurement, it's pretty much black and white. It's pretty set in regards to the what the regulations state. So everything that we follow in regards to how we award our contracts is found in 2 CFR 200-318. And so that really describes and sets the standards as to how we do everything at NHA. And as we go through procurement, there's 5 different methods that we utilize at NHA. We're doing the micro procurement, which is everything under 5,000. We do small purchasing in regards to between over 5,000 but below 100,000. We have our sealed bidding process with our firm fixed price bids. And we have our request for proposals for our professional services. And we have non-competitive, also known as sole source. But NHA hasn't really participated in any non-competitive. We've been pretty successful in competing most of the awards that we make. So competitive bidding, when we talk about competitive bidding and seeking offers from potential vendors, we do that with everything over 5,000. Any purchase that is over 5,000, you have to go through a competitive bidding process. And then anything over 100,000, that's where we go through our formalized advertising, to where we have to go through public announcement. So, and in all of this, it sounds pretty simple when we go out and we do all of our bidding, but every time we go through competitive bidding, we have to make sure that there are 2 or more responsive and responsible bidders. And so when we don't meet that minimum requirement, that requires us to go back out and resolicit and do everything. So that's just one thing in itself. And then when we go look at responsibility, we have to go through an entire due diligence process and making sure that our vendors have the technical capacity, administrative capacity, and more importantly, the financial capacity when we're talking about bonding in order to carry out projects. So that's a feat in itself when we go through and do the due diligence and do our research. And then with all of everything that we do on top of that, we have to go, and I forgot to put the citation down, but go through 24 CFR 1000, point 48 through 52, because as we go through, NHA goes through to the greatest extent feasible to seek Indian preference companies. So we go through a whole application process of how we apply Indian preference to all of our contracts. So I've been with NHA, I would say, a little over 5 years now. And when I first came on in regards to setting up this whole 5-year expenditure plan and how we were going to support that by creating the efficiencies within the organization, it was about a 1-year review process in 2012 where we did some major assessments and had the assistance of a consultant to really take a look and validate what we were reviewing within our organization and come up with some recommended changes to the approach that we were taking in doing procurement. So one of those approaches, there's 5 different areas that we focused on. One of them is supplier establishment and the relationships that we had with our vendors. We had to consolidate and come up with one NHA vendor directory so that everybody went to one source where we had all of our vendors listed. And then part of that, as we look at our guiding principles and seeking out those Indian preference vendors, we had to recognize and realize that a lot of our smaller businesses are having a hard time in regards to capacities with financing and bonding. So we took a step forward in leveraging our relationships with a lot of the small business resources. So when we talk about small business resources, they're usually free through Department of Commerce, through the Procurement Technical Assistance Centers. So we fostered those relationships so that we had a place to send our Navajo businesses so that they could build those capacities to eventually start doing business with NHA. The second area that we did was really implementing standards to define best practices at NHA. so that we're always doing procurement the same way every time. Everybody understood their roles and responsibilities to what they need to think about before initiating, during, and even after procurement is completed. So that was the standard operating procedure development. Everybody was informed. They knew exactly what was going to happen and when it was going to happen. Again, setting the expectations for the responsibilities, not only internal with our departments, but as we started standardizing templates and forms and language within our solicitations, it also set expectations for our vendors, what they needed to know and what areas of capacity they needed in order to do business with NHA. The other area in regards to implementing standards was really infusing our department in the planning aspect of what our NHA construction developments were doing in the very beginning. So a lot of project management coordination had to be infused. And so bringing on an NHA procurement plan and, you know, implementing it NHA-wide, that was key, getting in on early on a lot of the projects. And with the expectation and making sure that we had the time and resources of when those deadlines needed to be met. And so as a result of these standards, the outcome has been numerous no findings for the procurement department. And when we talk about best practices, and I know Mellor talked about NIAC being the main trainer for HUD as they go out and go to these other housing authorities, it's always, you know, Navajo has the best practices. We're going to use Navajo as an example. So we're always, you know, having to give examples, case studies, even when we're in those trainings. And it's been, you know, reiterated to us numerous times, even from HUD, you know, the best practices that NHA has established. Some of the other efficiencies was really looking at increasing our contract approval thresholds and responsibilities internally. So we had to take a look at, you know, where the bottlenecks were in regards to how we were going to get contracts approved through our board. So we looked at increasing contract threshold levels, as well as delegating approval authority with our contracting officers. So that really opened up a lot of, room in regards to expediting our contract awards and reviews. The other area was really looking at the assessment of workflow approvals. And when we say that internally, when we looked at bottlenecks, everything was coming through our department when it didn't need to be. So we made changes in regards to decentralizing a lot of our micro and small purchasing and giving that empowerment to the department so that they can plan accordingly when they needed to get things done and they can make the purchases on their own. The last thing that we really took a look at was really strategic sourcing. You know, how are we going to plan in regards to these large projects? So we have to streamline the contract process to expedite the delivery. And we did that through a lot of what they call indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity type contracts, to where we have on-call contract professionals, a lot of turnkey project approaches. Opposed to going design big bill, you know, we started going to design guild. And so it even went down to our supplies, you know, doing long-term contracts for our supplies that were being sent out to the field. And this is just to give you a summary, you know, of the award activity that NHA has participated in. So starting from the year 2013, 14, 15, and 16, it reflects there on the very top line. For 2013, $62 million was what we awarded. And just to make clarification, these guys were talking about drawdowns, how much was being spent. But these are actually new contract awards that were just beginning within that fiscal year. So out of the, in 2013, $62 million was awarded. But out of that, Indian Preference Companies were awarded $58 million. And of that $58 million, Navajo Business received $25 million. And so, and any other business such as, you know, just your non-Indian preference and other than Navajo was $3.8 million. And so on and so forth. It reflects 2013, 14, 15, and 16. But if you look at it as a total average, from 2013 to 16, NHA averaging in the last 4 years, $75.7 million in new contracts. And 87% of that going to Indian preference companies. And of the Indian preference, 57% going back to Navajo business. And then with 13% going to all other business. So we've been making strides in regards to having our Indian preference and Navajo businesses participate in a lot of the contracts that are being awarded at NHA. And because of our efforts in regards to leveraging the business relationships that we have to help our Navajo business, you know, capture more of those dollars, it has resulted in, I guess, in awards and recognition primarily from the Minority Business Development Agency, which is run by the Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in Arizona. So every year they do a business diversity summit in which they had awarded NHA the 2013 Minority Advocate of the Year, you know, just for our efforts in increasing the spending dollars with our Indian preference companies. And then most recently have been inducted into the 2015 Million Dollar Circle of Excellence, recognizing our excellence in supplier diversity for 2015 and 2016. So we continue to look forward in working with those resources so that we can increase the contracting participation by our Navajo businesses. So that's just my overview.
Thank you, Tara. I appreciate it. And that Circle of Excellence Award is other awardees are like American Express. We're in that league of others. I think we're only housing entity in that recognition. Yeah. Next, we have a very distinguished speaker. I really admire this person. When I come on to NHA and evaluated some of these subrecipients' capacities, this is one organization that really was top notch. Of all of that. And so I want to introduce my friend, Mr. Joseph Aspar. We created this relationship, but they do great work for our very, very low-income families on the reservation. And so and he can speak to you from a subrecipient perspective. And so, Joe, if you can come up and give us a few remarks, that would be so great. Thank you.
Again, I'm going to go ahead and repeat that. My name is Joseph, middle initial is G, and I tell everybody that stands for gorgeous, and everybody laughs. last name is Esparza, E-S-P-A-R-Z-A, and on the back side of that description of services is our name. With me today, I brought our deputy director, Jeremy Boucher. He's standing right there. In fact, he's the one that's going to be talking about the processes that he had gone through in trying to meet the mandates of the procurement system, the financial system for that the Navajo Housing Authority has directed us to follow. Roberta Concho over here, the lady in red there, she is our accountant. She will be speaking briefly on the finances that we've gone through to try to adhere to your mandates. And then after that, Jeremy will be taking you on a tour of our warehouse, giving an explanation of the things that we've done, our accomplishments. Basically, what I will be doing will be giving you a brief history Southwest Indian Foundation and why we are happy to be a subrecipient in this program, the housing program that the Navajo Housing Authority offers. Back in 1997, the Southwest Indian Foundation was only in the business of doing home renovations. Since 1968, that's when we were founded by our founding priest, Father Tungsten Schmidlin. But it was just home renovation, plus a lot of the other services that you see in that description of services. In 1997, the Air Force, the officers of the engineering department with the Air Force Academy, came down and met with us and asked if we would partner with them in home construction. That was something new for us. And so we took a chance. And in 1998, the first four homes that the cadets built up at the academy came down to Navajo. And you'll probably pass by one of our first houses that is right there by the junction of 264 and 491 going towards Shiprock. In 1997, Mr. Earl Tooley had gone to the Air Force Academy with our Chief Executive Officer, Mr. William B. McCarthy, and came back and he says, let me introduce you to then the Chief Executive Officer for the Navajo Housing Authority. And he extended the invitation to attend a meeting. When I walked in, it was like, who are you? What are you supposed to be doing here? And no one had ever heard of the Southwest Indian Foundation, even though we had been in existence since 1968. Anyway, we asked if there was any way that we could get some financing through the Navajo Housing Authority. And there was that reluctancy to participate with us. It wasn't until about 2000 when our Chief Executive Officer met with the Chief Executive Officer for Navajo Housing Authority, and that's when our partnership began with NHA. And since then, we have existed up until the present. This warehouse right here, this building that you see in front of right now, belongs to the Navajo Housing Authority. It was just a shell when we took it over. The Navajo Housing Authority asked if we would be interested in taking it over. They bought the property, the warehouse, and turned it over to us. Since then, we have expended a considerable amount of money of our own in remodeling it. This structure that you are in right now did not exist. The ground floor was nothing but dirt. Over the years, we built this structure, made this conference room what it is now, and it's now also the headquarters for the military. The military that come out here every summer to help us build homes. It's part of the reserve training for the reserve units, the different branches throughout the country. This year we'll have the Navy CBs that will be coming out here. As you can see by the pictures on the walls here, these are all the units that have been out here over the years, since 2000. And some are repeats, different units that have taken in more memberships or more members into the units. So we've progressed considerably. And we have, at this point in time, I understand that we have built, or are building, a total of about 261 homes now. That's what we...
When we finish this project, we will be up to 261 homes.
How do we fund this project? Well, if it wasn't for the Navajo Housing Authority, it would be very, very difficult. They've given us millions of dollars to buy the materials that we utilize in the construction of the home. We also use our own funding to pay salaries, pay for expenses that are not covered through the Navajo Housing Authority. To the tune, I would say, gather about $400 and some thousand dollars now that we have spent on our own funding.
on an annual basis for the project itself.
Yes. Where do we get the money? We get the money from our catalog. This catalog is distributed nationwide around 7 or 8 times a year. When I first came to work here in 1984, we were relying on appeal letters going out nationwide, and if we drew $1 million a year, we were lucky to provide all of the programs that you see in our description of services. Our young chief executive officer, Mr. William McCarthy, came up with this idea. And as a result now, it generates anywhere to 15 million, roughly.
Yeah. Something like that. Gross a year.
Yeah. And so this allows us to expand our services. We're able to provide a lot more services besides just building homes. And so that's how we generate our funding. Why did this whole thing start? The Air Force cadets at the academy were concerned because they were, as part of their engineering training at the academy, they had to do architectural design. They built the homes and then they tore them down. Well, that was frustrating to the cadets because surely somebody could use a completed home. So they came to us. And that's how it took off. In 2000, when we got together with the Navajo Housing Authority, we got $200,000 the first time. We built, I believe it was 6 homes. Or no, 4, it was 4 homes. Next year, we got another $200,000 and we built 4 more homes. But they weren't being built here, they were being built at the academy. We transported them down from the academy to people that have been designated as recipients for these homes. And in the third year, that's when the cuckoo hit the fan. NHS said, wait a minute, we're giving you $200,000, but you're not complying with NHA regulations. Well, we didn't know that. We didn't know. We thought it was a gift from the chief executive officer. So that's when the laws, the rules and regulations began. We had to comply with procurement regulations. We had to comply with financial regulations. That the way it is now. And so each year we try to build anywhere from 16 to 20 homes. It's not very many. It's a small program. We will never, probably ever meet the demand of 335,000. Never. But that's not what we're here for. We're here to try to help. Over the years, we've also learned that it's not that simple. It isn't that simple to comply with rules and regulations because there are so many that we have to adhere to. That includes not only the rules on procurement, trying to contract with people, but it also means that there are difficulties in trying to work with utility companies, in trying to provide the water lines to the homes, the power lines, meeting the requirements of 9 different committees for the Navajo tribe. So we understand perfectly the problems that the Navajo Housing Authority experiences every time they want to do something, because we have to go through same thing, only on a smaller scale. And so But we've learned. We're learning constantly. Thank God that Jeremy came on board about five years ago. And he will be replacing me when I retire in 2018, at the end of the year. That's when I will be stepping down. He takes over. Thank God that we will have a partnership like we have right now. That only continues. By that time, I'll be 1 month short of 81 years old. And I'm stepping down. Jeremy can take it over. Thank God that Roberta's been here. Roberta has been a tremendous asset to our financial part of the program. I think that this is all I need to present, and I want to turn it over to Jeremy to talk about the procurement process, the rules and regulations that he has researched, put together, and that we follow.
I don't have too much to add. Essentially, all of the procurement stuff that was already laid out, we've adopted that as our own, as a subrecipient. So it was basically a big cut and paste project. And we said, here's our procurement policy. So we followed the same procedures, the same rules and regulations. I came on 5 years ago. That was already in place. So we did that early on. Since I've started over the last 5 years, we've come a long way with the help of NHA. We started doing, so if you spend more than $750,000 a year, you have to have an independent audit of your program. We did that first, I think, and we were a little late. So we like I said, we've come a long way since those early days. So we had our initial audit, and it was probably an audit of two or three years. And there were a bunch of findings. So we've spent the last 5 years just trying to clean those things up. NHA has actually sent out their compliance team to do sort of a monitoring review of us. And we're down to one last finding. And it's a sticky one. It's one of those land issue deals, the binding useful life agreements, right? If you're doing low-income housing, you have to have something binding that says the owner cannot sell that home and profit from it if there are federal funds expended to build that home. Well, it's a difficult legal situation on the Navajo Reservation because ownership of property doesn't work the same way there as it does just on private land. So there's a lot of legal issues that have to be worked through. So we're getting there. We're getting there. And I think hopefully we're working with NHA still. As soon as we get those ironed out, then we'll be. We're looking forward to our first year of no findings at all. I mean, that's what we're all working towards. And you know, these things are. We've been just going along, building homes, and you know, there's nothing untoward going on. It's just that there is a stack of regulations, and it's taken a lot of work for us to go through and say, well, there it is. Yeah, okay, we should be doing this, that, or the other. So anyway, the long and the short of it is we've sort of grown with NHA, as all these things were getting straightened out on their end. It was kind of, you know, we can vouch for the fact that the whole program is gone to a very professional level. And we're a little behind, but we're sort of coming along, and they've given us, some really great technical assistance. And it's actually helped our program out a lot. So we're thankful for that, and we're definitely thankful for the partnership that we have. We're glad to have you all here. If anybody has any questions, I can answer them briefly, or we can just go down and take a look. I'll show you guys what we do. Basically, the way that the system works here is when, like Mr. Esparza said, when we first started, the Air Force Academy was building these homes in a modular style, and then we were shipping them down here. When we got the warehouse and extra funding, we simply took that system that they had designed and implemented it here in Gallup. So we went from doing four houses a year in those early years to, yeah, I think we're right around 10 houses in a 12-month period now. And so the Southwest Indian Foundation provides all the funding for the labor. So all the guys out there are paid directly by Southwest Indian Foundation. My salary, Mr. Esparza's salary, obviously. And then capital expenditures, so all the equipment that we use, the Bobcat, the backhoe, the trailers, the pickup trucks, all of that stuff that's more capital expenditures we cover. So over the years, it's millions and millions of dollars that the Southwest Indian Foundation has put in. And that's what makes it a great partnership. I think that is what's made us successful. I think a lot of programs try to get into getting funding from NHA because it looks like, hey, this is great. We'll get a couple million bucks and we'll build some houses. And then before they know it, they've expended all of that money in administrative costs and there's no money left for building. So that's why we've been successful. We haven't had to rely on just NHA funding to make the program work. We're glad to do it. It fits right in with our mission, and we hopefully will be doing it for many, many years to come. So, with that, let's head out. You want Roberta to speak for that? Okay, actually, yeah, I guess Roberta, did you have something to add? I'm going to turn it over to Roberta. She's got the details.
Details. I have the numbers.
She's the numbers lady.
What do you want to know on the numbers? Like Mr. Sparks said, Jeremy said, we've been doing this I've only been here since about the same time, just before AJ came on board as CEO there. That was in 2006. And I know where she's coming from when you get OIG report, 32 pages of findings. So our few findings, we've been there, done that, and yes, it's a process to work through, and look how many years it's taken for us, even our few findings. We've been working years to get to a point, but we certainly value the partnership with NHA. We've worked with many of her departments, the compliance department, grants management department. We have an excellent development coordinator in Johnny G. We meet with him monthly, every month. We assess our progress. He gives us updates, guides us on our project. We're now working with your labor compliance department, procurement. We, like Jeremy said, we've been following that. We've made our changes and gone through our board and got that all approved. So we're moving along. And luckily, we're not a very big subrecipient provider, but I saw that number on home ownership. Was it? Oh, they reported 26 in the APR. How many of those units are ours? Mm-hmm. 19.
19, yeah.
9, did you?
Yeah.
I said,
yeah, what is 9.6? A lot of those are
ours. Yeah, exactly, because we always wonder, like, who else is out there building? Because,
subrecipients.
Yeah. But so I'm glad about the note about going to the points where the projects are out there so we can actually maybe see who else is building out there, because We just do our part.
Yeah, we're sort of head down into our project. Right. So we don't know a lot of what everybody else is doing.
And like Merrill, right, said, Navajo Nation is so huge. And so we only cover a 60-mile radius of Gallup. It doesn't cover all the chapters. We probably only have assisted 43 of the chapters out of the 110. But that's in a 60-mile radius. And every time we get a lot of clients come in from beyond that 60-mile radius. But for our project, we can only go that far because our guys only go out there, get out there, do the work, come back, and they have to be back here by 5 or get off by 5. So we can only go so far. And it's a challenge to go beyond that. We have...
We've done some... Turnkey projects.
Yeah, we have 7 that are beyond our 60-mile radius, and it is a challenge. We can understand the vastness of the Navajo Nation. I come from Zuni and Acoma, so I'm used to, like, we're right here. So. And our housing needs are a little bit different, but same Indian country out there. We all deal with everyone needs a home and provided, but Pueblo people are a little different mentality, but we won't go there. But like we said, once we finish this project, and we're wrapping up the last of the 50 on this particular project, and we'll get us to 261 total. Of those, 208 have been funded by NAHASDA money. We've received just under $13.9 million over that time period to do those homes. So like I said, that's just the cost of mainly the development cost. A lot of the other costs are supported by Southwest Indian Foundation. So that really does help us to complete these homes. And it's rewarding to give a family a home. We have a waiting list probably pushing about 40. And the majority of those are out of service area families. We are trying to address that on a short-term basis, try to maybe get in a couple each year if possible. I think the NHA is asking for proposals again for the next funding cycle, so we're putting together a proposal, and we're trying to get back up to our 18 to 20 homes in a project period. Because this last funding, like they were talking about the moratorium and funding ceased for any new development. So at that time, Southwest Indian Foundation was able to go out and secure some other outside funding from HUD money, but it was Economic Development Initiative money. And that was able to help us during that moratorium period build 16 more homes with other funding. And SWIFT, we also used some of SWIFT money to build another home. So during that time period, in the moratorium, we still continue to build on our own without NAHASDA money. And then once it was lifted in 2011, it was like, here's some more money. It's like, okay, that's enough. Because at that time, in 2011, they awarded us just about $8.6 million. So since 2011, that $8.6 million, that is what we've been trying to expand on these projects. We had roughly that's been 70 homes with that money. And then we also were given some funds, $1.6 million, to go back and address the infrastructure needs of our prior year families. We put out 138 homes prior to 2011. And at that time, our agreement was with the families and NHA, this is what you'll do. We'll build you the home, but you'll have to take care of the infrastructure. You'll have to take care of the electricity and water. And now our families are all low income. I mean, our project only funds or selects the very lowest of the lowest families as far as income goes. So consequently, about 40% of those families were not able to get electricity or running water.
Well, and at the time, we had really no idea
what
a process and how difficult it can be.
Exactly. So we've been working on those, and this year, I think we're going to wrap up the last of the 53 families that we had to go back. And it has been a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
Since 2011 to learn the process of what it takes to get electricity and water out there. Some of our families, not knowing this way back, we selected families that were like 6 or 7 miles from any kind of electricity or water lines.
And they want their house on top of a rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's the most beautiful spot around.
Yeah,
so.
Nice view, but we cannot. So it's been definitely a learning process. We've had to deal with the 9 departments of Navajo Nation to get the environmental clearances. So every one of those has to deal with their various area that deals with the environment, and we have to get that concurrence to get that clearance, because once we get all of that, and we have to do our report, we send it to Construction Services Department, Tomasita, Morris, I remember her name. She's the one doing all the review of all of these, everyone's environmental CADEX report is sitting in her office to be reviewed. So it's a lengthy process, and like she put up the chart there, 3-5 years, yes. We had a house sitting just north of Gallup here for, what, 4 years? We set the house down. Here's your house. Now we're just waiting to get the electricity and water. It took us 4 years.
Yeah, with land right-of-ways. And
right-of-ways, BIA, NTUA, and then now we have a new, the EPA.
Oh, EPA, yeah,
EPA now has systems. new policies on, what's that?
Septic systems,
water quality. So that's been another learning process for the past year now. So every little, it's not stumbling block, we try to jump over hurdle, go through, but we're getting there. And it's, we're finally getting to a point where we feel we're able to, capable of maneuvering through all of the rules and regulations that apply with NHA, and we certainly have been happy with our partnership with them. Thank you all for being here.
Well, thank you, Roberta and Joe and Jeremy. Thank